Welcome to the Butts and Seats podcast, episode number 102.
We still are doing these damn shots for some reason.
This is the last one.
Thank God.
You want to just get it over with?
Do the intro to the show first, and then we'll do the shot.
I'm Nick, alongside a very flustered Emily.
Hello.
Emily, how you doing today?
Great. It's been great. This was a show, and then we watched it. Great.
We had to talk about, like, how does this rank in terms of everything we've watched recently, and we'll talk about it more at the end, but our end of, we're finally at the end of our row of bad shows. Or say, we're picking shows because they're bad. We'll probably review more bad shows.
Oh, 100%. We aren't even at the, you know, crux of bad of Nitros. It's only getting worse, baby.
As Emily mentioned, we do have a shot.
One more of this row of... This is a celebration. We've done 100 episodes. Now we've done 100. Well, we're going on to 102. It's a celebratory shot.
Yes.
Because happy is our last. Today we are drinking a mixture of Screwball, peanut butter whiskey, and rum chata, which is actually delicious. Cheers.
Cheers.
Very good.
Substantially better than the Fruity Pebbles infused vodka that I did, that you made, that I did last night and immediately puked.
Oh yeah, that was bad. Although, Fruity Pebbles infused Aperol, if you wanted to make an Aperol spritz with that infused Aperol, it's actually delicious. Highly recommend that one.
Is it worth $18?
No.
So today we'll be talking about the really only one ever, specifically, NWO pay-per-view. It's sold out 1997.
So if you say it's the only one, why do we have to put the year after it?
Yeah, this is the first time they've done sold out, but they do sold out a couple more times, but it's... I think next year's is like, it's hosted by NWO and WCW. That was a weird thing for 97-98. Like, it's a dual brand. Because this show is meant to be a soft launch for them doing their own NWO show.
It didn't work.
No.
Clearly. Seeing as this is the only one that is NWO centered and themed and hosted. Didn't work.
Yes. They do an NWO Nitro later in this year.
Ooh.
And they spend like 20 minutes setting it up. And like, everyone changes the channel.
Yeah, I believe that. Because this era, I think, of NWO is so, like, we're the freaking best. Like, look at us. We are better than anything else that's happening on TV. You should just love us because we're us. It's very self-indulgent.
Yeah.
They're very into themselves, and it's kind of gross. And I think everybody agrees because clearly this didn't work.
Yeah. To quote Dave Meltzer, it was less entertaining than watching someone masturbate for 3 hours. In fact, I'm not sure that isn't what we actually watched.
Yeah, seriously. Especially, we'll get into it as it goes, but the specific intros for the WCW superstars as opposed to the NWO superstars, that is so just self-indulgent. It's very self-indulgent.
Yes, it's the word of the day.
It really is.
So Sold Out 97 takes place on January 25th, 1997 in Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
I'm just chilling in Cedar Rapids.
Yeah, I was unaware of this joke.
So we had to take a moment. I had to show Nick the vine of Hillary Clinton in Cedar Rapids.
No, you had to show me a YouTube clip of the vine because Vine is dead.
Are you in the NWO? Do you just need to be right? It was funny. Did you laugh? It was funny.
Sure.
It was 6 seconds and it was funny. Oh, man. It's iconic. I'm just chilling. More like Chillery Clinton. 2016 was a wild fucking time.
So there's like 5,000 people in attendance. This apparently was a sellout, but the arena holds 9,000, so I'm not really sure how, but...
It wasn't sold out. It was sold out.
Shut up.
Get it?
It did 170,000 buys, down from 345
Yikes.
Last month, and next month is 275,000
so
buys.
So people really were not into this concept.
Well, it doesn't help that last month was Starrcade, but next month is just Super Bowl, and it...
I mean, still, it's pretty evident that people did not want this. Eric Bischoff thought people wanted this a lot more than they did.
Yeah, we did not watch the Nitros leading up to this, but I'm like, it didn't seem like anything had a build.
No, and I didn't even really think about that.
But let's get into this show. And by into the show, we go down the street because the entire NWO enters on garbage trucks.
So before we get into
this. Not all of them. One person gets a limo.
Before we get into the show, I do want to call Nick out a little bit. When we were watching WrestleMania 9, he was a little doom and gloom and he kind of hated his life. But I was loving life because it was the show that I chose. even when we were watching it, for Sold Out. He hated his life watching it, and I called him out. I was like, you cannot be grumpy doom and gloom when we record this, because this was your choice. You did this. This is you.
Hey, Emily, remember ECW December Dismember?
Uh-huh. That's only on the Patreon, baby.
Where you make a choice and then go, uh-huh. Oh, no.
But you were so excited, and why did you say that you chose this show?
I wanted to. It's a mix of two things. I wanted to make you suffer.
Yeah, exactly.
And admittedly, I wanted to rip the Band-Aid off. Because I knew we were going to do the show eventually. And I'm like, you know what? Let's just do it.
Hey, Nick, we control this podcast. We don't have to do anything.
Yeah, but it makes sense for us to do it.
We don't have to. No one is like holding us contractually being like, you have to watch this show. Unless you pay for our $50 tier on Patreon and be commissioner for a day. Because then we'll watch any show that you ask us to. Patreon.com/butts in the seats.
But yeah, the garbage trucks. Yeah, we go down the street and there's a handful of garbage trucks. It's all in black and white. And the NWO members are, like, hanging off the back of the garbage trucks.
I think it's supposed to invoke the same feeling of DX on the tanks. I know they're not tanks, shut up. But that's, I think, what they're trying to go for, of, like, the cool entrance or the cool start to a show.
Yeah, but them surrounded by garbage, I'm like, oh, it's like poetry. They rhyme. Every stanza, you know, rhymes with the next.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they clearly think this is really cool. And it's just kind of not. Like, and it's highlighted by X-Pac, known here as Six, he, like, hops off the truck and is just, like, walking the same speed as these garbage trucks.
I think there's a point where he's even walking faster than the trucks. He has to slow down. And there's a pedestrian in the background while they're doing this shot who's not part of this at all, just walking on the sidewalk, walking faster than the trucks.
Yeah, it feels like that opening scene of Office Space where he's trying to navigate the traffic and the guy in the walker's going faster.
Yeah. We should watch Office Space again. We've been talking about it a lot recently.
So we kind of cut around to everybody. Everybody has a little line or two to...
NWO is so cool.
Yeah, no one says anything of note.
Welcome to Sold Out. This is the best show ever. Like, that's the vibe.
Yeah, and then there's one limousine with all the garbage trucks, and I'm like, I will bet that's Hulk Hogan.
Hey,
and
you're right.
We don't see him get out, but Hogan's there suddenly, and he was not on a garbage truck.
Yeah.
There was a small part of me that's like, what if I just put this in, as we put in some promos, stuff like that, and I'm like, you turn the podcast off.
Because it's not anything.
Yeah, nothing happens. It's
No, they're just talking about how cool they are.
Relatedly, I will not be doing the director's cut. I'm sorry. I apologize to those who wanted it.
I don't even know what the director's cut would be.
It was just the NWO theme plays under this entire episode.
Oh, absolutely not. Because in reality, it should be the B-team theme.
Yeah, well, we'll get to that. We didn't get the opening package, now in color, which they even have a line that it's like, okay, we're not going to do this whole pay-per-view in black and white, so color.
That would have been a choice. I could have seen them doing it.
And in the package, they're like, WCW sucks. And I'm like...
You still are WCW.
No, they're NWO, Emily. But they're it's so different.
It's not!
What are you talking about? It's so different.
They are still WCW.
Yeah, friendly reminder that Eric Bischoff's like, no, now WWF is the third brand, because we have WCW and NWO, and it's two different brands.
But it's not. It's not.
We got Eric Bischoff on a podium on the stage. I'm afraid I've got some bad news.
Oh, my God. This is after, like, the press conference NWO entrance thing.
Yeah.
This is so stupid.
And then Technical Difficulties welcomes three screens of Hulk Hogan, Scott Hall, and Kevin Nash. Each one of them has their own big 30-foot screen.
But they all say it's about time. Did you catch that? It's about time. It's about time. It's about time. Like, all three of them.
This is such Muppet Vision 3D energy on this.
As soon as you said that, I was like, this is the kind of thing that you would watch or walk past, really, in a queue or a line for a ride at Universal Studios.
Yeah.
This is the... You all gather in a room and you're told, here's the mission of the ride, and then walk away. That's the vibe.
Yeah. Miss Elizabeth is here. She takes off.
Oh, my God.
She takes Eric Bischoff's trench coat and then puts a jacket on him. And Bischoff joins trillionaire Ted DiBiase on commentary.
I don't know why I had such a problem with the Miss Elizabeth part of this.
Is it because this is the only thing she does the whole fucking show?
Honestly, no. I think my problem is more in Eric Bischoff's gray hoodie. I think that took me out of it more than anything.
He's wearing a cozy jumper.
He's wearing, like, light distressed denim and a gray hoodie with a, like, black trench coat over it that he just replaces with a black leather jacket. So Why weren't you just wearing the black leather jacket the whole time? But when he takes off the trench coat, he looks so gross. Like, you were just, like, hanging out at home and you're like, oh, shit, I got to go do a show. I don't know why that off put me so much, but I was like, put a little effort in, my dude.
So do you know the origin of Trillionaire Ted?
Well, because in WWE, he was the millionaire.
Yes.
So this has to be better.
There is a middle step.
Was he a billionaire at one point?
No. The Billionaire Ted sketches were a series of ill-conceived and ill-performed like vignettes of WWF just taking shots at WWE for hiring all the old guys. Mm. And so they had like the Huckster, the Nacho Man, and Billionaire Ted Turner.
Gotcha.
Then Ted DiBiase went to WCW. And so
and they could be the billionaire.
They're one-upping the Billionaire Ted sketches.
Oh my God. Do those exist anywhere?
They're probably still on the network.
Oh, we should find them.
It's just not good comedy. And every now and again, they have like a line or two that it's like, ooh.
Spicy? Like,
yeah. There's a whole thing with lithium. I don't know.
Lithium? The batteries you can't take on an airplane?
No, the actual like element. I know. So this is a crowning achievement, apparently, and
How?
Because it's an NWO pay-per-view.
Oh, okay. Well, sure.
For what it's worth, WWF will do a In Your House Degeneration X at the end of this year, and then In Your House Rock Bottom at the end of next year.
There is self-indulgence on both sides, obviously. Yeah. We know this. Like, we've watched enough WWF to see how much they love fucking DX. But there was never a DX pay-per-view. Even an In Your House, that's not really a DX pay-per-view.
It was. The In Your House is just a label for the non-Big Five pay-per-views.
Was that kind of their version of this?
It's much less so. They are not as all over the show as this. Because DX at the time was also three people.
Sure. I just think of the In Your House like umbrella. That wouldn't be the same as this. Even if it is a DX like specialized pay-per-view. It's not the same as, like, this is a DX pay-per-view. It's an In Your House, but it features DX.
Yeah, it's just a marketing thing.
Yeah, I know.
Because, like, The Rock one is In Your House, Rock Bottom, and it's just, like, The Rock has gotten his own pay-per-view. And he's in one match.
Oh, yeah, see, that's not the same. Not the same. I'm overanalyzing this too much. I know.
It's going to our first match. You had some faith here, but it is Chris Jericho versus Masahiro Chono. Masahiro Chono, we have seen on the podcast before. And
so I usually have so much forgotten. Faith. I have so much faith in the Japanese and Mexican wrestlers because I know what they come from and I know that they are usually fantastic. So when I saw Jericho versus Masahiro Chono, I was like, this could be really great. I was incorrect.
Yeah. The last Masahiro Chono match we watched ended up getting my worst bit. It was some tag match. And because he shows up on the pay-per-view, cuts off somebody's promo, and then wrestles the next night on Nitro and then is not to be seen again.
Nice.
He tags with, like, NWO Sting not in face paint. Oh. I think they, like, called him, like, Jeff Farmer or whatever.
Oh,
or, like, Super
weird.
J.
Double J? So, you actually introduced him incorrectly. His name is not Chris Jericho tonight.
Yes. From somewhere north of the border, Chris, I should have stayed with hockey, Jericho.
This is the start of them shitting on, in big air quotes, the WCW superstars rather than the NWO superstars.
Yes, WCW wrestlers get no music and get the snarky WCW announcer insulting them. It is the same guy. I was kind of surprised.
But it's frustrating because for every intro, we end up giving up after a while. We had to back it up to hear it again because it's just quiet and mumbly enough that we can't hear it clearly.
Yeah, well, they also got lazier with it.
That's true.
Masahiro Chono comes out to the B-Team theme and admittedly, there's a lot less regular NWO theme on this show than I thought there would be.
Yeah, I was fully prepared to like make it count.
Three times. That's it.
Which is really shockingly conservative of them.
Masahiro Chono comes out and I see people on hogs. And I'm like, oh no. The Miss NWO ladies are out.
Can we call them anything other than hogs?
No.
We never even called them motorcycles. Harleys. They're hogs.
Also just three fat dudes just sitting on the
stage. Yeah, because it's their motorcycle. And they're like, don't fuck up my bike.
No, they all own their own hog. And who doesn't love a woman with a hog?
See, stop saying hog. But I felt bad for these women a little bit.
Two of them got the worst end of the stick.
Well, because two of them were, or at least one was ringside. Was there two ringside?
Yeah.
But the bike was facing the ramp, so they had to turn fully around on the hog to look at the match. I felt bad. I was like, that's so uncomfortable. And you have to sit there for 3 hours. Like, yeah, it's cool. You get the closest seat in the house, but like, at what cost?
I have no sense if these women know what wrestling is.
I really can't tell either.
But don't worry, we'll get to the Miss NWO contestants.
Sure will.
Nick Patrick in a backwards hat and an NWO shirt is the referee.
I hate this. Oh, I already wrote down that this is my worst bit. It was a contender at the start. Hated this. He looks like such a douchebag, and he doesn't look like a referee. So it's kind of confusing as to why he's here, because everybody and their brother is in an NWO t-shirt. Now there's just this dude bro in the ring that's wearing an NWO shirt.
Apparently, I don't know why this was the moment for them to do it, but they're like, yep, we're going to start charging more for the NWO shirt because it's so popular. Well, you should be begging to give them away right now.
Yeah, you should be careful with that. Self-indulgence. But yeah, fucking hated this.
We get some chain wrestling and jawing to start. We then get some members of the WWE roster showing up in the crowd. We give up on this fairly quick. It's literally here for one moment later. But we see Harlem Heat with Sherry, the Nasty Boys, the Faces of Fear, Arn Anderson, and we see Deborah. Mongo is here with her, but we don't see him at this time.
Yes, Mongo is in place.
NFL Hall of Famer, Mongo.
We get a couple people later on as well, too.
Some more slow chain wrestling as commentary are just annoying pricks. I don't have many notes for them, but they are great. It's two heel commentators. That's the problem.
They're
it's
really easy to tone out, too.
Yeah, it's... I'm on record as, you know, I don't get why anyone enjoyed heel Michael Cole on play-by-play back in, like, 2011, 2010.
That was just, like, a dark era of WWE.
But there's two of them here. And I'm like, fuck me. What you needed to do was... Due to some contractual obligation, Tony Schiavone is also here.
Yeah, because you know, he has to fulfill something.
To bounce off of or to call bullshit. Because it's just, wow, I have an 18-inch penis. You sure do, Eric.
That exactly. It's so uninteresting to listen to. So say what you will about the Jim Ross, Jerry Lawler, how they do commentary. Say what you will. Their voices are at least distinct and unique enough to cut through what's happening. Ted DiBiase and Eric Bischoff do not have unique voices in that regard. So they don't cut through. They just blend in. There's no, I can't hear them. Like, it's not that I can't hear them. I don't want to hear them. They don't trigger anything in my ear of like, ooh, what's that? Like, no.
It's one of those, they have a great podcast to fall asleep to.
Yes! They have podcast voice. I know they have a podcast, but like, yeah.
I don't know if Ted DiBiase does. He probably does. Ted DiBiase might have one, but that might be just to be to pay his legal fees.
I don't think he's the $1 million man anymore.
Totally separately, I didn't have really any backstage notes from this, which I think is only notable because this does break our streak of Mark Marrow appearing in our backstage notes.
That is shocking. Sorry, Mark, you weren't invited.
I even tried like a few weeks around this to be like, is anything going on? No.
Mark wants to be far away from this.
Mark's busy getting buried in WWF.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, your wife's hot.
Yeah.
It's enough for you.
Get out of here. Anyway, there's a match going on.
Cherno goes up top and hits a diving shoulder block. Jericho counters a suplex, hits one, and then a spin kick and a dive to the floor. It's around this time Eric Bischoff really feels the need to tell you how much he knows about karate. It's like,
oh, I missed this.
It's like, you know, some people call that a spin kick that's actually a fucking bibbidi-boppity-boo kick, whatever. I'm like, I don't care, man. It's fine.
In case you forgot, I have a black belt. I think that's the funniest thing to brag about, having a black belt, because like 13-year-old boys have black belts. Is that really like something that you want to brag about as an adult? Unless you're like still actively practicing karate, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I don't know what the grading curve for that is.
I don't know either, but like I know that high school boys can have black belts.
Chono takes out the legs of Jericho. We get some USA chants from Winnipeg, you idiot.
Yeah, that just shows that you're stupid. You're not even racist. You're just stupid.
We did have that on the last show, too.
Yeah, this is true.
Actually, on both the last shows, at Heroes of Wrestling and WrestleMania 9.
There were USA chants at Heroes of Wrestling. Oh, Jesus. People are dumb.
Oh, this is the point where Jericho hits that kick and it's like, yeah, that's a... we're not going to give it some fancy name. Proceeds to give it a fancy name. It's like a backwards leg.
Backwards
yada, yada.
Double drop kick. Suplex.
It's a flying leg kick.
Yeah.
Chono tries for STF, but Jericho gets the ropes. What does an STF stand for anyway? Moving on.
Don't answer the question. What does it stand for?
I think it's like a step takeover face lock or something like that. It's something that effect. Jericho hits a back suplex and a bridging German, but we get a slow count from Nick Patrick. It's like, oh, get used to this.
He's a screwy rev. Who'd have thunk it?
We then, for the first time, get weird NWO cam.
Oh, this is funky and weird.
Yeah.
So it's basically a like handheld camera.
Yeah.
Strapped to the top of a pole.
Yeah, it's just a GoPro on a pole.
Yeah, and it's just like hanging over the ring. The guy who's controlling it has no idea what he's shooting.
No, and for better or worse, it's a different color temperature than the main cameras.
I think that's good, so they can differentiate.
Yeah.
Because you see it, you're like, oh, that is definitely not the same. This isn't like a, it's not a malfunction.
Yeah.
It's intentional. But it's fucking weird, and they cut back to it a lot throughout the show.
Yeah, some more than others.
Yeah.
We get a sleeper slam from Chono. Chono goes up top, and Jericho kind of counters a diving shoulder block, and something went wrong here. They definitely some miscommunication.
Oh, for sure.
Atomic drop to Jericho. Chono grabs a Japanese table and sets it up at ringside.
Is that what it was?
Well, the tables in most Japanese wrestling are the much more, like, thinner width.
Yeah.
And are known for not breaking.
Oh, interesting.
But yeah, it's definitely, I don't know if that was intentional here because it's Masahiro Chono.
Because it was definitely a smaller or at least different table.
Yeah. Chono sets it up at ringside. Jericho counters an apron suplex and hits one of his own. Jericho then hits a diving dropkick, but Chono gets his foot on the ropes. Jericho hits a lion salt, but we get another slow count. Jericho gets pushed off the top rope through the table at ringside. So not he who sets it up goes through.
I know. I was ready for it. I wrote down like, oh, he's 100% going through that table. But no.
Chono hits a kick to the face in the ring and wins.
One match done.
Yeah, this was not particularly good.
It wasn't particularly bad either.
Yeah. Some miscommunication at a lot of points, but commentary just like this is the lubing you up for the rest of the show.
Yeah, this really does set the tone, and it's not a good tone.
Speaking of not a good tone.
Hey, back to the ladies on hogs.
We then see more of the Miss NWO contestants, and commentary kind of jerks themselves off about I didn't have any of that sense. Like, nope, it's just that.
They show a like PowerPoint slideshow of a whole bunch of women that have applied.
And didn't make the cut.
Didn't make the cut.
And over the slideshow, immediate boring.
Yeah, because this doesn't matter. These are women that nobody knows. Like, yeah, they're cute. But like, nobody knows these women. Why do we care? I also kind of thought it was hilarious that commentary is like sitting on milk crates to do commentary for that the whole show.
Oh, I missed this.
Yeah, they're not sitting on real chairs or anything. They're just sitting on a pile of milk crates. Or something equivalent.
Yeah,
to me, it looks like that.
So a lot of these women did not make the cut because they had to find the right women and they had to be local.
This was so disgusting. So some of his requirements for contestants for this, they had to be local because we're not paying for their travel. And they had to have somewhere to stay because we're not paying for a hotel. And it had to be people that are already coming to the show because we're not buying them a ticket. Like, it was so icky, like right off the bat. We didn't even know that this was planned to be icky, but it was so fucking gross.
Yeah, so we then throw to Jeff Katz.
Tell me about Jeff Katz, Nick.
Jeff Katz, from all accounts, is generally just everything he touches turns to shit.
Oh.
So he is a film producer. Apparently he's 18 here. I don't know how I feel if I believe that or not.
He looks very young doing this competition. So if you said he was 18, I'd believe you.
But he is best known for genre movies such as The Pope's Exorcist.
Oh, which, horror movie.
Yeah, it's very bad. Well, and it bombed.
But I think horror movies are bad.
For some reason, I remember there was some big WWE involvement where they like played a whole fucking trailer for this like before a match and like sponsored
a pay-per-view. Oh, I do vaguely remember this.
I can't remember what the fuck show it was. Oh, it was for the Brood Edge versus Demon Finn Hell in a Cell match.
Yeah, that tracks.
He's also produced Snakes on a Plane.
Motherfucking snakes on this motherfucking plane.
Freddy versus Jason.
So he's got some, like, well-known bad movies.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's something.
He apparently handled play-by-play for, like, pay-per-view events on, like, online streaming, so.
Oh, okay.
And his main contribution to wrestling would be he did a Kickstarter for a company called the Wrestling Retribution Project, which he raised $100,000.
Okay.
And the thing with this, apparently, was going to be that it existed in its own canon. So they had big names, even for like 2011. I mean, like they had the Young Bucks, Kenny Omega.
Oh shit!
With some problematic names like Joey Ryan. Everybody, Kenny Omega wouldn't play Kenny Omega. He would play a character like unique to this.
Interesting.
Yeah, like apparently they had somebody like come out as gay during the first show.
Oh.
They recorded and did these shows, and then he never released it.
So you paid for nothing.
Yeah, and he's done interviews where it's like, he like very much dances around saying, I just took the money.
But he did. But well, he did and he didn't, though, because he made the show. He just didn't release it, which doesn't make any sense. Like, if you're just going to take the money, do it. But you made the show.
Apparently, Nigel McGuinness on commentary was known as Vivian Edmondson.
Nice.
There is some on YouTube, apparently, but yeah, he never released it formally.
So this guy is just kind of a semi-well-known bad decision maker.
Yeah, there's... But wow. Yeah, Jeff Katz, 18 years old here, and he is Eric Bischoff's protege, according to this. Ugh. And I'm nothing if not giving on this podcast, so I have given Emily the responsibility of running us through the Miss NWO contest.
Thank you so much.
I mean, look, you handled the Nitro Girl contest.
I did.
You handled the, I think it was the Miss Nitro?
I did.
Yeah, contest.
So it's me and the ladies. First thing you should know is while we're running through these 10 contestants, we don't get names. So it's lady number 1 through 10.
Yes.
Unfortunately. I wish I had their names, but we don't get them until the very, very end.
Yeah.
So Jeff Katz goes up to each of these women and asks them a question, and they have to answer to the best of their ability. It should be known that this is a loud arena next to a band, and they are not, like, they don't have earpieces in, so it's kind of hard to hear.
Yeah.
So a lot of these women have a hard time understanding what the question is. What Jeff Katz is even, like, doing, yeah, talking to them.
And Jeff Katz does not also slide the microphone over enough to hear all the answers.
Not always. So this first one's a doozy. So Jeff's first question to lady number one. First question tonight. This sets the tone. What does the term NWO going all the way mean to you? Do you remember what her answer is?
Flacia.
Did that even pick up?
It sounded like Flacia, is it like fellatio?
But yeah, I think she was going for fellatio, but like, it sounded, but she said, yeah, fellatia, and then we backed it up and we put the subtitles on and it said Malaysia.
And Jeff has to go, is that all
so far? What the fuck does that mean?
So she already blew someone.
She already gave somebody in the NWO head and she's waiting for more. What?
All right, on to contestant number two.
Contestant number two. Her question. Kevin Nash is known as a big man in the industry. How would you tame this big man?
Anything it takes.
Okay.
We'll be back all night. I'm like, why are you threatening me?
They don't know what the fuck to say. They weren't given any heads up, any briefing. These women were not told a thing before they started this.
There was a moment, I think, with her where he kind of goes for the follow-up, and she just kind of gives him a look, and I'm like, okay, you at least, like, kind of knew what you were going for there, but...
Some of these women are clever. These two are not.
No.
Felicia.
We'll get worse later.
Oh, the Malaysia really got me, though. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Oh, God.
So that's our first take on the NWO competition. Like, yeah, I said, there are 10 competitors, and we cut back to this 5 times.
Match number 2, Hugh Morris with Jimmy Hart versus Big Bubba.
Nick, who's Big Bubba?
The Big Boss Man.
I was so excited.
Who'd have been?
Who'd have been? I didn't realize that he was in WCW.
Yeah.
Like, he came out, and I was like, that man looks familiar. Like, does that man ever reside in Cobb County, Georgia?
Well, for his tattoos, he does. But I'm pretty sure he's with WCW when we did Uncensored as well.
Was he?
I think he's just not on the card.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess that's different. I just didn't realize it. I didn't realize he was in the NWO or WCW period. And you're like, oh, no, yeah, he was here for a minute.
Yeah, he's one of, I want to say he's one of many people that when they were like, we're going to let like any old fucker join the NWO. Like, here's an open invite to everyone to join.
He was like, yeah, I'm an old fucker.
Yeah.
But he's not that old. Comparatively, he's not that old.
No, but humorous, snarky comment from the announcer. This man's face is funnier than his laugh.
And that's the right tone, too. It is so quiet and under the breath. It's kind of like a side comment that you make, yeah, to your friend when you're trying to talk shit. It's not good for an announcer.
Because I'm not even sure he said face, admittedly.
I think he did. He said something is funnier than his name. Yeah. I think he said face.
And then this is a Mexican death match, apparently.
Yeah, we don't get told that right away.
Because the announcer mumbles something probably racist about a tortilla when Big Bubba's coming out.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was. And I'm like,
I don't know what it was either, but there was the word tortilla was thrown out. I'm not sure what he was trying to say. We didn't back it up to check.
Yeah. Commentary buries Randy Savage on commentary because he just came back and did like a sit-in angle on Nitro. And
okay.
Yeah, I just...
This didn't seem like the right time to do it. They're being heels. Well, no shit, but this didn't seem like the time or place to talk shit on Randy Savage.
The two men just kind of brawl to start. Bubba begs off and hits multiple low blows. He then tries to handcuff Morris to the ropes, but is clotheslined to the floor. Bubba hits a chain shot on Morris. Nick Patrick keeps looking away until he doesn't. And I'm like, if it's a Mexican death match, you don't.
Yeah, why are we trying to trick you? Bossman, I'm just going to call him Bossman, not Bubba. That's who he is to me. He has like a chain in his fist and hits him with that first. Like when you say a chain shot, that's what it's a chain shot. He then goes on later in the match to start whipping the chain. But the first shot is just balled up in his hand.
Yeah, because Morris hits a chain shot despite Nick Patrick going, hey, come on, there's rules of this match. And Ted DiBiase commentator is like, oh, come on, there's all the rules. And it's like, I don't know how much of this is bad production versus I'm being worked.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's the problem, is like, there is an element of I'm a heel, but it's also like, are you doing that knowing, or are you just being lazy and it's accidentally working?
For me, what I think is happening is Eric Bischoff had an idea for a show and everyone asked him like, okay, so what are the stipulations, whatever. And his answer for everything was, yeah, we'll just wing it. We're NWO. We can do it. We'll just go out there and do it. Yeah, that was his answer. And that's why nobody knows what's going on.
I always love. And the Nigerian drum match is like the king example of one of these.
We keep going back to the Nigerian drum match. But
like,
that match.
Like the Ambrose Asylum, even the Firefly Funhouse at one point. But it was like when a company announces a match stipulation based on a name and has no plan.
The Nigerian drum match will always be the worst contender for that. I am still to this day mad about the Nigerian drum match.
Emily, who was in the Nigerian drum match? You remember?
Not one drum was touched. It doesn't matter who was in the match. No one touched a fucking drum. So mad. We didn't even play a little song on him. Nobody went boom, boom, boom. Like nothing.
I thought that you did it.
No, he didn't.
Anyway.
I will die mad about that match.
Morris hits No Laughing Matter and we don't get a pin attempt. And I'm like, what the fuck? And like, oh, It's a last man standing match. That's what the Mexican death match means.
I would have loved to have heard that.
Yeah.
No one is giving us any information.
Yeah, because Nick Patrick starts counting Bubba down. I'm like, that's not how this works. But, oh, okay. I finally got it. Patrick keeps trying to wake Bubba up during the count, which I thought was kind of funny in terms of like the screwy referee.
Oh, I'm like, yeah. No, I definitely did like that. Like he played a good heel ref. He did. I just hated his outfit. And I will also die mad about his outfit in this.
But also, it gets old having a screw referee in all the matches.
Yeah. Well, it gets better later.
Morris clotheslines Bubba down and asks for another count. Morris then hits a spike or something shot. I don't know what the fuck this was.
A spike or something?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
I don't know. He's got like a little secret object and it's like, eh.
Oh, did he have a weapon?
Yeah, at one point. Because Eric Bischoff is intentionally a hypocrite about like, you can't use weapons.
Oh. I missed that.
Bubba asks for a count and actually gets a fair count. It was not like a 1, 2, 3, 4. Like, it was a normal count. Low blow to Bubba and then another. Morris drops Bubba on the stage and goes for a moonsault like from a few steps up the stage because half the set is just stairs.
Yes.
Which I'm realizing you have motorcycles on some of the lower steps.
How the fuck did they get there? Yeah. I actually didn't hate the stairs being a big set piece.
No, yeah.
No, I kind of thought it was cool, especially the way that they're used in this match. They could have been used better, but this is like at least the most creative way to use them.
Yeah. So Morris misses a moonsault, but he doesn't really do a moonsault. He just kind of like turn dives. Like he knew he was missing and went, I'm not taking that bump.
Yeah. Which, who can blame him?
And then the boss man goes to NWO contestant number one and asks to borrow her motorcycle.
And she obliges. She gets off like a lady.
He then runs down Hugh Morris.
Like, fully runs him down. This was incredible, honestly. This was so well choreographed.
Fucking,
and, like, the safest way you could have done this. But it looked so cool.
He did it for The Rock.
This was really cool.
And then, for some reason, Nick Patrick, like, quick count. 1, 2, 3, 4. Like, you fucking ran him over. He's dead.
You don't need to quick count. The man is dead.
You count to 100.
But just the way that they did this, it looked so real at the first shot. And then they come back and you see how it's done. I'm like, wow.
Yeah, props. It's basically...
This looks so good.
Like, Bossman hits, like, a shoulder tackle while driving a motorcycle is the way they end up doing it. Anyway, it's fine. It looks good.
It really does.
Like, a fun ending, but a dull first 98%.
I mean, yeah, but the ending makes or breaks a match.
Yeah.
Especially for you, I've noticed. But if it's a great match with a shit ending, that ruins the match for you, which is, you know, fair. But... This was a boring match with a great finish. And to me, I'm sold. I'm in.
I will remember this finish.
Yeah. Hey, Nick, do you want to maybe know more about the Miss NWO contestants?
Let's go back to Jeff Katz.
Hey. So we have contestant number 3. And her question is about Hulk Hogan. Hogan has a lot of power in the movie industry, apparently.
Mr. Nanny in Santa with Muscles says otherwise.
What would you do to be in one of his movies?
Whatever it takes.
That's the answer of the night. What am I supposed to say? I'm going to suck him off. Like, what are you going to, like, I'll drive him to the audition. What do they want you to say?
Contestant number 4 is described as buoyant.
Yes. Her question.
She's probably the best of them.
Yeah. Her question's about Ted DiBiase. Ted says, everyone has a price. What's your price? She had the best answer. Her answer to Jeff Katz was, well, you would walk away with a pretty big bill.
Yeah,
that's a good answer.
That's clever.
That's a good answer. She's the first clever one of the group.
She's the most attractive one, and she was clever. She should have won.
She wins. I wish. But this is also, after this conversation, is the first time that we see the really weird silhouette dance thing.
I fucking love this.
You love this?
Because, as mentioned, the screen is like 30 foot high. Yeah. And the silhouette is like not exaggerated at all.
No, it's so just it's human size.
So it's just like 6 foot and there's so much dead space above them.
They're trying to go for like a, not Austin Powers, but like that kind of like vibe. It's just a silhouette behind the screen. So it's just a woman dancing, but she's just like, you know, 5 foot something woman just dancing.
Yeah.
It just looks so stupid. It looks like a mistake.
And like, it's not even like a sharp shadow. Like, no. There's like a, like one main one and then two like sub shadows as well.
Yeah, it's so janky.
Commentary then talks about NWO.com.
That is a website.
Yeah.
They showed us some shots of the actual website that in 1997. I don't remember the internet in 97. I was 3 years old. But this even seems low tech for 1997.
Somewhat relatedly, did they finally change the Space Jam website? I think they did, right?
Oh, I don't know.
I know that's the one everybody's like, it's still up.
I don't know. I haven't looked.
Maybe they did it for the new movie and everyone's like, what the fuck?
I just remember in like the late 90s, early 2000s, my mom made a website. She created a website entirely on her own about like genealogy because that was a big hobby of hers. And her website looked better than this.
Yeah, spaceship.com is now goes to the new movie.
Mm.
Also says now playing in theaters. Jesus Christ.
Oh, no, it's not. Maybe if you rent out a theater and play the movie, it's playing in theaters, but yeah, no,
it just
it's
links
not.
The fucking trailer and says now playing in theaters. Like, you ruined internet history for that. Oh, let's go to our third match of the night.
We're cranking. Let's go.
Jeff Jarrett versus Mr. Wall Street.
So tell me who Mr. Wall Street is.
The IRS.
Mr. Wyatt, correct?
Yes.
Nice.
Jeff Jarrett, this redneck hails from Music City, USA.
Is that an insult?
Redneck?
Is that really an insult, though? Some people are so proud to be redneck. Like, that's not...
You had some insults for Jeff Jarrett's attire.
Oh, my God. This man walked into a streamer and was like, oh, my God. This is the look. He's just wearing this like shiny, all I can think of it is his streamers. They're streamers attached to a streamer collar.
Space cowboy stripper.
Yeah. It's something. But I kind of had a weird moment with this because I just recently watched a documentary that I found from A&E about like why people are obsessed with wrestling. And then this must have been from the late 90s because there was nobody.
Freddie Blassie is a tough talking head narrating it.
But there was a shot.
Too.
Oh, okay. Then that tells you a lot. But there was a shot of this outfit talking to and about Jeff Jarrett. This shot of this outfit behind these stairs. I saw this in the documentary. And in the documentary I was watching, I was like, that does not look like Jeff Jarrett. That's weird. I guess it stuck in my brain because when Jeff Jarrett comes down those stairs, I'm like, holy fuck, it's from this.
Yeah.
It's this.
This is like 3 years before our timeline.
Amazing. Awful outfit, but amazing.
For the third time tonight, we get the B-team theme. Nick also, Patrick comes out first. We're like, we thought it was for him.
Yeah. Also for the third time tonight, we get fucking Nick Patrick making his entrance to the ring. Why?
Baby, I do not have a lot of notes on this
That's
match.
Okay.
My first note of the actual match. Not a ton going on early.
Yeah, there really isn't a lot that happens in this. We don't get a lot of momentum. It doesn't really pick up. And when it does pick up, they just slow right back down.
Yep. Jarrett goes up top, hits a diving crossbody to no reaction.
Well, the crowd's realizing what they just paid money for, and they're like, shit, get me out of here.
I think it's also, Wall Street is a no-heat heel, and Jeff Jarrett is, like, kind of heel at this point. He's trying to join the Horsemen, but...
Mm. Yeah, that was his big story going into this.
Back to a lot of nothing. Nick Patrick pushes Wall Street out of the way of a Jarrett attack, and...
I did like that move, actually. Yeah. Realistically, that was really good of Nick Patrick to do as a screwy referee. I thought that was really good.
We see Deborah looking distraught in the crowd.
Is this where we see Mongo for the first time too?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, because I have a note that says Deborah and Mongo are distraught, or are they just bored?
We get someone else doing that later.
Yeah.
Jerry gets Irish whipped into the crowd, and then back in the ring, the IRS hits a Glargay sleeper on Jeff Jarrett.
Yeah, swerve.
We then get Deborah and Mongo heading towards ringside as Jarrett hits a Glargay sleeper. Wall Street then locks in his chin lock, his speciality. Nick Patrick asks if Wall Street was using the ropes, and this spot isn't working. They keep doing like, hey, are you using the ropes? No, use the ropes. Like,
it doesn't work.
They sit
yeah.
in this for a while.
Yeah.
Jarrett starts a no-reaction comeback and hits a suplex, but misses a diving fist drop. Jarrett then signals for the figure four, hits two like little attacks, and then locks in the figure four. I'm like, just do the move.
Right. I don't know.
But Nick Patrick drags IRS to the ropes.
Again, I liked Nick Patrick in this role in this match. If you're going to be a shit heel referee, then like, yeah, do it.
Deborah tries to get Mongo to help. Mongo is one of the horsemen, which is part of the reason why.
Yes.
Wall Street locks in and abdominal stretch using the ropes. And Mongo hits a briefcase shot on him and then threatens Nick Patrick to count the pin.
Where did that briefcase come from?
It's the briefcase he was given to turn on his partner and join the Four Horsemen.
So he just kept it?
It was full of money, I guess.
Oh, do you think it's still full of money?
Yeah, it was a it was a briefcase. He opened it up during a tag match, and it was a bunch of money and a Four Horsemen shirt. And like within 5 seconds, he's like, "Turn to my partner."
I mean, yeah, I get it. Depending on how much money, yeah, I would do it too.
It's like, you know, D, I don't really have any convictions. So Jeff Jarrett wins with Nick Patrick counting the pin, and we cut to Arn looking bored.
Because so
they're like, "Well, will they let him in the Horsemen now?"
So uninterested. Later on in the show, when we see more people from the roster out in the audience, they're not paying attention. They're very much just enjoying being audience members.
Let's go to the Babe Master.
Hey!
It's Harbinger of Doom, still here. Jeff Katz.
So we're on to lady number 5 and number 6.
What do you think of the women?
Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. So now we're on to lady number 5. Lady number 5 has an unfortunate haircut. This is the era of the bowl cut, and she's rocking it. Her question that she was given by Jeff Katz. Describe the part of your anatomy that would best help you win Miss NWO. Now, usually the answer that they're looking for would be something like, my ass, my tits, my smile, my face. Like, no, my feet. Like, you're into what you're into. Like,
was
good
there
for
a
you, girl.
Follow-up for that? Nope. I thought it was like, what do you mean? Just smiles.
No, he didn't ask a follow-up. He was just like, not what I was expecting, but all right, moving on. But like, fully confidently said feet. I'm like, good for you, girl.
Sorry, I'm already laughing about number 6.
Yeah, number 6 is a winner in my heart.
Doesn't she win?
Is she the one? No. So number 6, her question is,
how you doing, hey?
Her question is, Buff is known to have one of the better bodies in the ring. What would you use to buff his biceps?
I can't hear you.
What?
What?
How would I explain this?
Let's move on.
I'm so confused. But I love her.
As soon as, how you doing? Eh? Like, oh no.
So her information, I do have it later. She is semi-retired as her career.
Yeah.
Her name is Ella and she's semi-retired.
Yeah, she... I guess we're not talking about the ages of a lot of these women, but like everybody else was probably like 30s or 40s. She is up there.
I mean, yeah.
She's definitely the oldest, and there is somebody who looks very young still to come.
Yes. You were way more focused on the ages than I was. That girl that you think was young, she could have been younger than the guy who was doing the interviews.
Yeah, fair. Our next match, it's Scotty Riggs versus Buff Bagwell.
He's buff and he's the stuff.
Scotty Riggs' snarky intro. He's always been number 2, American Males loser. I did have to ask you, American Males, does it slap?
American Males. Yes, it does slap.
Well, see, I was like, oh, it's obviously not going to slap. And then, because in my brain, I've only heard the meme version where it's just American Males over and over again. I forgot that shit fucking, that kicks in. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah, you played it like, on YouTube because you were like,
Jimmy
this
Hart
is a
special.
Joke.
I'm like, oh.
Yeah, you played it as a joke of, like, listen to this bad song. I started, like, bopping to it. I'm like, American Males. I was into it. I like it.
So when Scotty Riggs comes out, he goes, NWO for life? Nah. WCW forever.
It's so lame and cringy, yeah. But...
Like, I don't know if he's going for a Terry Funk thing here, but he's not hitting it.
No.
Buff gets the B-team theme.
So no that's top. Another B team yeah. theme.
No top after buff, but he does have a collar. It's because he's their bitch.
Ah, great. Love that.
Nick Patrick can't get Buff's vest off because he's so buff.
They really lean into this too. We're like, it's stuck on his biceps. How the fuck did he get it on? It obviously can come off. It's not like pulling it over the top of your head or something. Like, you got it on. Get it off.
He's also flexing. It's the equivalent of, I've put my hand in the cookie jar and oh no, my fist can't come out.
Yeah, exactly.
Riggs starts up tempo and Buff threatens to leave since Riggs doesn't want to wrestle.
So this didn't make any sense because they were wrestling.
Buff then hits kicks and then locks in a headlock. We get a bunch of NWO cam in this match. Buff regains control in the corner. Belly to belly from Riggs and Buff barely sells. Riggs hits strikes until they back and forth counter hip tosses, and Riggs throws Buff over the ropes, and Eric Bischoff's like, that should be disqualification right there.
It's not.
It's your ref, you stupid fuck.
It's also not a DQ.
That's an old WCW rule.
But we've never upheld that.
No, not in never. Years.
Well, yeah, I guess not in the Bischoff run.
No, that's an old Bill Watts thing. Bischoff then puts over the NWO cam as it being like revolutionary. Like, you're going to see things you've never seen.
You duct taped a handy cam to a pole.
Yeah, Vince Russo. It's like,
oh, cam baby. On a pole.
I'm glad he never saw this pay per view because that would have been all the cameras.
Oh my God.
Buff hits a single Sheamus chest strike on the apron and then Riggs hits a diving axe handle. At commentary, they say that Piper, Savage, and Flair, they aren't coming back. And everyone else went to Connecticut.
Well, the way he says it is like, they went to Connecticut. Like, kind of put some stank on it. Oh, you got them. Did they actually... They didn't actually go to WWF after this, right?
No.
Savage
was on Nitro. Yeah. They're all coming back. Just
wanted to dig, just for funsies. Remember that there's another... They So, one thing that WWE/F never really did, and I think that it helped them in the long run, they didn't really... pay attention to the competition. Like, if they did, it was very minute and minimal.
Emily, I just told you about Billionaire Ted.
What I'm saying is they didn't call it out on commentary like this.
They knew when to stop.
Yes. They knew when it was appropriate to make the joke, when it'd be funny or, like, you know, impactful to make the joke.
I think it is they learned because they did not know and then...
Well,
yeah, then they very quickly were like, all right, let's just stop doing this.
Yeah, like you'll never hear them talk about AEW these days. Like they don't say it.
No, the king of that is Kurt Angle going to Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. I don't have any room in my tag division, but I hear TNA is hiring.
There you go. Yeah.
Which is like, dude, you won that war 10 years ago. You don't have to kick up now.
Yeah, exactly. But I think that in the long run did WWF... They won, obviously. It did them better for not constantly reminding people of this other company. Because, like, for a show like this, it's such shit. Like, you would hear that and be like, oh, yeah, WWF. Wonder what's going on over there.
Over the PA, we just hear, loser. Like, first time we heard that during a match. Like, what?
Yeah, it's weird. I don't like it.
Bunch more NWO cam as Buff works over Riggs. Riggs starts to come back until he's cut off. And a something sucks chant breaks out. It's apparently Bagwell sucks.
Yeah, we have a really hard time figuring out what this is.
Commentary is like... Commentary doesn't know what the hell it is either. They say it's something that's very clearly not.
Oh, I didn't even hear them speculate. Like I said, I was tuning them out so hard. They just were not cutting through.
Yeah, they're like, listen to them chant NWO or some fucking bullshit.
Oh, what? No.
Buff taunts Riggs, so Riggs starts another comeback. I just realized Buff does not do his stupid dance.
He does not. He doesn't do his little strut.
I don't think he has it yet.
Maybe not.
But Riggs starts another comeback that's cut off with a hard power bomb, and we get another loser. Riggs then gets Buff's ass out in a thong on a sunset flip.
That's a jockstrap, right?
I don't know.
I don't know either. I've never actually seen one be worn.
I know there is some... I know there is something with that. I know, like, of all people, Lance Storm talks about it.
Oh.
He's like, yeah, make your ass look good. Like,
okay. It's all about the aesthetic.
Yeah, it's like, don't wear shit underwear that's going to make your ass look bad.
Yeah, why do you think women wear thongs? It's not for the comfort.
But I love how ladies' man Buff is like, no one should see my ass.
Yeah, I don't know, man.
Buff then locks in a rest hold and taunts another... It's like... He does this a couple times. It's just a lazy camel clutch. Buff taunts the crowd to no reaction, but then there is a Bagwell sucks chant. I'm like, God, that's like one of very few chants we get on this show.
Yeah, there's no passion. Nobody cares enough to chant.
Riggs hits an electric chair drop and then gets a boot up on a Buff charge and manages to hit a tornado DDT. Drop kick from Riggs, but Buff hits a power slam. And then Riggs hits a sloppy powerbomb for a slow two. Riggs tries for a superplex, but Buff pushes him off and hits the brand new Blockbuster for the win.
Oh. It was brand new?
Yeah, they say like, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, they named it like on commentary.
He calls this the Blockbuster.
Yeah.
Buff dances with a few of the Miss NWO women on his way out. And I'm like, if you gave this 6 minutes, it might have been
okay.
But you gave it like 15.
Yeah, this is one of the longer ones on the card. This is just boring.
They didn't have, it was 14. Like, they did not have 14 minutes in them.
No. This is also the start of Eric Bischoff talking about the Super Bowl that is apparently happening tomorrow.
Yes.
He's just talking about other things that are happening, which is, it's very strange.
He's bored.
Why are we talking about the NFL?
Yeah, we wouldn't want to pull attention away from Jeff Katz. Fuck me. He's like, we're almost there. I'm like, thank you.
We're on to lady number 7 and 8. This is lady number 7. Her question is about Vincent. Are they talking about Vince Russo? Which Vincent are we talking about?
They're talking about Vincent as in Virgil, but this question is meant to be a Vince McMahon joke.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't get that. Anyway, so the question is, Vince is known to dress up. Are you willing to dress up with Vince?
Yes, because they mentioned like something like, you know, like a powder blue suit and a bad hairpiece.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah, that's a Vince McMahon dig, because he would occasionally wear the powder blue suit and had weird hair.
Again, stop talking about them! Who cares? Focus on your own shit! Anyway.
I need to show you all the segments of Eric Bischoff coming out and going, hey, Vince McMahon, come fight me on pay-per-view.
Oh my god.
Like, over and over again.
Stop it. Focus on your... If your own product is good enough, you don't have to keep reminding people about the competitor. Stop it!
By the way, Vince McMahon's answer was, I would not be appearing on pay-per-view, but if he wants to meet me in any parking lot in America, I will meet him there.
Good for him. Well, we're not going to compliment him.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the question
is,
Vince likes to dress up. What would you wear to dress up? Or are you willing to dress up with Vince? And what would you wear? Again, we get a, I can't hear you.
She's right next to the band.
Yeah, there is a band thumping in her ear. But then he like kind of repeats, what would you wear? And she goes, sure, I'll wear some lingerie.
Yeah, why
like,
not?
Okay, cool, bye. Like, she got the gist of the question, and was just like, whatever, yeah, I'll put a lingerie, whatever, who cares. Lady number 8.
So, we had to rewind this question, because it is Scott Norton, who they refer to as Flash, and I guess you missed the opening bit of this.
Yeah, the sound went over the Scott Norton part, okay? I will defend myself for that, because I said, wait, who is Flash? And they're like, Emily, fuck, it's Scott Norton! I couldn't hear it, shut up. So, the question was, Scott Norton is called Flash. Would you help Scott with his flashing problem, or would you add to it? And this girl was like, I'll add to it.
Yeah.
Ew.
Huh? These two people got yes or no questions. They kind of learned a little bit.
Yeah, thank God. We're getting better. Or are we? Anyway, that's 7 and 8. We have one more of these.
Our next match is Diamond Dallas Page versus Scott Norton. Scott Norton has the B-team theme, and as he is making his entrance, Emily is like, who is this guy?
The outfit and the stature, it was not clear on the ramp who it was, so I was trying to speculate who it might be, and I was like, is that the Giant? Because the outfit was kind of similar. And Nick wasn't saying anything until the graphic came up, and I was like, well, fuck me.
So, Emily, I have a little surprise for you.
Is this what you ordered? Is this what I wasn't allowed to know about? Nick.
What is it, Emily?
Nick. What? This is not real. You
yes,
did not pay money for this.
No, yes, I did.
Nick, what the fuck?
Spent $20 on it.
God, why?
Emily, tell the audience what it is.
Nick got me an autographed picture of Scott Norton. Why the fuck did you spend money on this?
Do you remember who he is? The funniest thing is, I'm pretty sure he doesn't appear on the rest of Nitros.
Oh my god.
I bought a frame, but it was too small.
Is that why there's a frame by your bed?
Yeah.
Oh my god. What the fuck? This is the stupidest gift you've ever gotten.
Well, for some reason, they shipped a bonus. So here's a signed one of Juventud Guerrero.
Hell yeah! This is so funny. Oh. And he's pinning the cat in the picture, too. Where did you get this?
eBay.
This came in the mail, and I saw it in the mailbox on our camera. And Nick grabbed it. I was like, oh, what came in the mail? He's like, don't worry about it. I honestly forgot about it. This came like a week ago.
Yeah.
I can't believe you. This is going right up there. I already have a spot for it.
No, I wanted to go over your monitors.
No, I'm not putting it over my monitors. I want it on top by the... Yeah, I want it up there. That's a perfect spot for it.
Where you'll forget about
no,
it?
No, I can see it. I can see from where I'm sitting. No.
Scott Norton watches over you.
This is amazing. You're an idiot, but this is amazing.
So there's a match. Scott Norton shoulder blocks DDP to the floor.
I guess Scott Norton has to be my best bit now, doesn't he? He has to be my MVP.
I can't be your MVP. No. Norton continues to overpower DDP, but Paige is crafty. We cut to Meng in the audience about to grab his beer and then cut away.
Oh, yeah. Meng is the one that I was saying that we didn't see right away, like coming into the arena. He's just like excited to be an audience member, I think. He's just happy to be there with a beer.
Swing neckbreaker from DDP, but Scott Norton regains control. Pancake from DDP, and he signals for the diamond cutter, but eats a jawbreaker. Something's going on in the crowd, and it's like, oh, it's Sting. He's just standing over there.
They don't zoom in on him. He's just kind of standing there menacingly, but it's not Sting.
We're pretty sure it's not
Sting. I'm pretty sure it's NWO Sting.
They don't cut close enough, but I'm like, this doesn't come up at any point.
It's Stung.
Scott Norton throws DDP around ringside and works over the arm. Eric Bischoff says that apparently Scott Norton was drawing a crowd back when he was a bouncer.
Oh, yeah. They're like, oh, yeah, people would come to the bar that he was bouncing at just to see him. Like, no, what? I don't know that that's true.
DDP hits a discus clothesline, but Norton is immediately back on offense, as is just this match. DDP hits one move. No, I don't sell.
Yeah.
Norton dodges a ground pound, keeps mostly no selling.
A ground pound?
It was like a hip drop. DDP hits a diving clothesline and a jumping DDT, and then we hear Buff Bagwell on the microphone. He's coming to the ring with Vincent, IRS, and Big Bubba.
Cool.
Buff offers DDP to join the NWO. We should mention that in the build to this show, DDP fake joined the NWO for about 6 seconds and hit a diamond cutter on Scott Hall. He has turned them down.
Yes.
Buff Bagwell's like, come on, we want you in the NWO. I'm like,
he already said no.
Yeah, you guys just asked him.
It was like 6 business minutes ago.
The DDP is like, hey, you know what? It's cool. I'll join the NWO. And then it's a diamond cutter and leaves. It's the same angle. They just did this.
It's not even like they put a week between it. It was like,
I think it was literally at the Nitro. I think it was 5 days ago. Like, at least the only saving grace is it is like the stupid members of the NWO.
Oh, yeah, it's the B team.
It's like, well, I said no to Scott Hall, who I used to tag with.
Yeah.
But Buff Bagwell, you drive a hard bargain, sir.
That's my boy. I'll be there.
Apparently Norton wins by count out and Nick Patrick says it, but Jesus Christ, what would the angle's so nice we did it twice.
Yeah, definitely so nice, for sure. I mean, it was cool. Like, it's always cool to see DDP go into the audience and, like, celebrate with the crowd.
Yeah.
Like, I love that shot.
Even though he lost this match.
Yeah, whatever. But then we get Buff looking into the camera just going, this will never happen again. I don't believe you.
Yeah. I know they don't, but party wants them to do the same angle on Nitro. It's just, this is DDP's shtick now. He just, every week, joins and then,
I don't believe you.
Yeah, but in terms of this actual match, like, Scott Norton does not sell and therefore usually does not have good matches.
What do you mean? Nicky's my favorite wrestler. I have a signed picture of him.
Oh, God.
Of all the wrestlers for me to have signed memorabilia from, I don't have anything else. But I have fucking Scott Norton.
Let's go to the fifth horseman of the apocalypse. It's Jeff Katz.
Last one. This is Lady 9 and Lady 10.
Which we don't even see it at first because he just starts talking over the replays.
Oh, yeah. We don't see Lady number 9. We only hear her. We don't actually see her. Because they keep playing replay and commentary even is like, oh, sorry about that. We just had to show you that ending again. Like, they don't even give a fuck. Anyway, the question for Lady number 9 is, what is your favorite maneuver and will you show me how you apply it? Like, it's a sex move. Her answer, I would show you, but there are children watching. Again, a clever answer.
Yeah, but
we
love that. You put too much stank on it.
Oh, I definitely did, but I'm giving it more personality because there was none. But at least it was a clever answer. It was something. Lady number 10. This is where we get a little bit racist. Masahiro Chono comes from a male-dominated society. How would you make his stay in America a little more like home?
Whatever he wants, as long as he has chopsticks.
Correct. It's funny because he's Japanese and it's chopsticks and it's funny, right? It's funny. I hate it here. Anyway, let's move on.
So let's go to our next match. It is the Steiner Brothers versus the Outsiders for the WCW Tag Team titles. We get the snarky comment for the Steiners, the two dog-faced Michigan mutts.
Got him.
I think one of them calls himself the Dogface Gremlin.
And they are always wearing University of Michigan merchandise. So why this is not a dig.
We didn't get the actual NWO theme playing for the first time tonight.
Finally.
For Hall and Nash.
I never thought I would say finally for that.
The Outsiders have a bad t-shirt.
Oh, it's just them. So I likened it to if you go to JCPenney and you get like a photo shoot done in front of that like weird gray wall. You take the awkward photos of your family in the 90s. It looks like Scott Hall and Kevin Nash went to JCPenney and did that.
Yeah. Like, they never had good merch. The other one was just said, like, Outsiders.
Yeah. In, like, papyrus font. Yeah. It looks like a weird photo shoot. Knowing them, though, I wouldn't be surprised if they did that.
Hall and Scott start. Hall throws his toothpick and does the spooky fingers, despite the fact that he threw his toothpick earlier.
Maybe he had two toothpicks.
Hall gets cocky, which fires up Scott. Hall tries to work over the back, but Scott powers up and hits a belly-to-belly. Nash tags in and eats a DDT. Rick then tags in, works over Hall. Nash is not in this match for a lot of it.
No.
Hall catches a dive and hits a last call. He gets cocky again and in comes Scott. Choke bottom to Scott and Nash tags in. Nash hits some strikes, sending Scott Steiner into the corner.
And we're in the corner. This is where I thought we were going to live in this match.
Yeah. Nash does his five moves. He count the fucking hair flip.
Jesus.
Steiner hits a belly to belly and tags in Rick, who immediately gets worked over. Rick hits a power slam, but gets a slow count from referee Nick Patrick. The Outsiders then cheat to work over Rick. Nash tries to use the ropes for leverage on a pin, but Rick kicks out. Then get the NWO cam getting very shaky as the heels keep working over Rick.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, Kevin Nash, like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, it kind of started like bumping into Kevin Nash in the corner. So you are kind of running through this match, which I don't blame you for, because it wasn't that great of a match. It wasn't that interesting. That said, though.
The best match so far.
Scott Hall and Scott Steiner blew me out of the water in this match.
Yeah.
I was so impressed with them, like to the point where I was excited when they were in the ring together. The second that Rick Steiner and Kevin Nash got in, I was like, oh, well, this is going to be boring. But whenever Scott and Scott were in the ring, I was like, okay, let's fucking go. We got some fun moves. We got some flips. We got some jumps and shit. Like, I was really impressed with the two of them.
Yeah, you were also thirsting a little bit over
Scott Hall's hot, man. I don't know what to tell you.
Nash misses an elbow drop and they keep beating down Rick. Hall baits Scott into the ring so the Outsiders can work over Rick on the outside. Nash hits a sidewalk slam and Scott finally breaks up the cheating. Rick hits a sneaky low blow and they get the hot tag to Scott. He cleans house, hits a butterfly suplex and a teardrop suplex. Nash gets clotheslined to the floor and the Steiners go for their finisher, but Nash breaks it up. And this apparently bumps Nick Patrick. It was really sloppy.
Oh my God. It was the most refs are glass moment that I've ever seen. Because it was literally just a, oh my bad, man. Like a little tap. And he like flares out of the ring.
He Shawn Michaels Hulk Hogan bumped it.
Yes. Oh my God.
We then get the Outsider's Edge to Scott, which makes me laugh that it's like, yep, I hit it, but he doesn't kick out, so it's fine. Oh my God. We get the Steiner Bulldog to Hall. And from the crowd, referee Randy Anderson runs in and counts the pin.
Saving the day. What a hero.
Commentary immediately is like, this will not count. We are going to reverse this tomorrow night.
And they do.
They do, and they fire Randy Anderson.
In the moment, though, it was a good match. If Eric Bischoff could shut his fucking mouth for 10 minutes, it would be great.
Yeah, it was a nice little moment.
It was.
But like before he even gets to his feet, they're like, no, don't enjoy this.
Yeah, fuck Eric Bischoff. If that's not
Don't ever obvious. Dream, kids. This match was definitely a mixed bag of, like I said, the two Scots being in there actually definitely picked up. And then I don't necessarily blame Rick, but Rick was given the spot of, okay, you're going to get worked over.
Yeah. I don't know. I still, though, if I could give MVP to both Scots, I would. I was so impressed. It was like, we know that the next match has got a better chance of being good because of who's in it. But this one, I was so ready to write off and they really shocked me. Like, I want to watch more of them. I don't think I realized how much I like Scott Hall's style.
Yeah.
Because I associate him so closely with Kevin Nash that the two of them just, like, make me groan and roll my eyes. But watching just Razor Ramon or just Scott Hall alone, he's a good fucking wrestler.
Yeah, we really didn't see a lot of Scott Hall
on
the podcast.
Because he's in and out, you know?
Yeah.
But even on WrestleMania 9, he had a fairly good match and he looked good doing it.
3 minutes.
But he was hot, so it's fine.
Commentary keeps going on and on about like, nope, doesn't count.
Yeah, Eric Bischoff just needs to shut his fucking mouth.
Like, he's doing it like in the main event still. Like, I'm still so upset about that.
He doesn't shut up.
We actually get a break from Jeff Katz. We get an actually good match next.
Thank God.
It is the Mexican jumping bean, Eddie Guerrero. Ugh. Versus Six.
We love racist comments. It's fine.
It's a ladder match for the U.S. title. Ugh. It's funny. I knew this match was on here. I assumed it was for the Cruiserweight title.
Yeah, no. Wait, what title is it for?
The United States title.
Oh, shit. I do love Eddie in the mullet era, though. Like, he is so strongly rocking that mullet. Looking very much like Dominic. Side-eye the conspiracy theorists.
Six goes back to the B-team theme. I figured he had a shot at maybe getting the black and white.
Nope, he's B-team too.
Hard spin kick early from Six. Hard chops from Six and a botched tilt-a-whirl. They try again, but it ends up being a head scissors from Eddie.
And it looks way better.
Eddie hits a top rope, dive to the floor, and then brings Six back in the ring. Eddie lands on his feet from the corner, but eats a diving spin kick. And then Six hits a hard Bronco Buster. Hardest one I've seen.
Yeah, that one actually looked like it had some purpose behind it.
The hardest one I've ever seen that didn't result in a ripped anus.
Who ripped their anus?
Oh, Six, X-Pac did that.
Oh, no.
Yeah, like complete tear. It was like, oh my God.
How do you do that, Matt, that move so hard that you rip your anus?
He did it like into the turnbuckle.
Oh, I got it.
Like the person moved.
Gotcha. Jesus Christ.
Eddie dropkicks Six to the floor and tries for an apron suplex, but Six counters. Get a tope from Six as we hear a hard F word from the crowd.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that.
Not quite Heroes of Wrestling level, but
No, yeah. And when we say F word, we mean the F slur. No, we're not saying fuck. Yeah. No, I was not expecting to hear that word associated with either of these people. I didn't think... I don't know. There was something about it that was, like, jarring. So... Yeah, it took me out of it for a second. Because it goes for a minute. It doesn't go for too long, but it goes for just long enough to kind of pull you out of it.
Six goes for a ladder on the stage, and Six runs the ladder into Eddie on the ring apron. Nick Patrick helps set up the ladder for a spot, and Eddie smashes the ladder into Six's face.
Oof.
We actually get Eddie chance here, and I'm like, holy shit, you're like the second person to actually get like specific chance for you.
Yeah, they did not want to be chanting in this show.
Hard shots to Six, and Eddie gets whipped into the ladder in the corner. Six stomps the ladder onto Eddie twice and then vaults Eddie's knees onto the ladder. Like, ow.
Yeah, that one looked like it hurt.
Six plants Eddie on the mat and climbs the ladder, but Eddie is up quick and gets knocked off the ladder. I'm like, that was it? Like, that was the big spot you had?
That was it. But I mean, it still looked good. I'm not mad. This match was not bad at all.
Six goes to ride the ladder down, Sean Razor style, but Eddie drop kicks it into Six and then hits a superplex. Eddie sets up the ladder, both men climb it. Six hits a dropkick from the 7-foot step up the ladder, knocking both him and Eddie off the ladder.
This was such a holy shit moment. Yeah. I gasped. Like, there's no... Why did he do that other than just, like, recognizing that he's going to take the bump himself? Like, that looked harder on Six than it did on Eddie. Because Eddie could fall on his back, he can kind of, like, prep himself for it more, but Six kind of falls on his front and side, like...
Yeah.
Why would you do that?
I don't see a lot of people do that after this, so I think maybe he's like,
"Yeah." But it looked really cool. It was a very holy shit moment.
They both climb again, and Eddie gets knocked off, but stumbles the ladder over. Eddie then climbs the ladder again slowly, but is stopped, and Eddie knocks down Six. Eddie climbs it again, and we hear on commentary, "Do this one for Alice in Chains."
What?
I don't know. Commentary. They decided to try to, like... Rude on Six by Do It for Alice in Chains. I don't know, man.
Yeah, there's a backstory there that we are not privy to. So I called the end of this match the Triwizard Tournament finale, where they both grab the belt at the same time. So they're both kind of the winner, but Eddie ends up pushing
Eddie knocks Six off the ladder, and I'm pretty sure he's supposed to hold on to the title, but he drops it. So it falls with Six, but Six doesn't like grab it. Yeah. So Eddie hops down and grabs it. And
Eddie wins.
So yeah, Eddie Guerrero wins, and thank God.
We needed something good.
Bischoff says that Six will have a new belt made. He doesn't, but he does win the Cruiserweight title at the next pay-per-view against Dean Malenko. But,
yeah, he gets
like,
something.
The Cruiserweight title has been around. Like, I was checking, like, did they not do that until then? Like, no, he just... But finally, some good fucking food.
Yeah, this was a really fun match to watch. I was also very impressed with this one.
In a vacuum, I don't know about 4 stars, but on this show, yes, I understand the grading curve.
100%.
This was a good match. Definitely got a little more of like a hidden gem.
Yeah, definitely. And there's so many people out there that say, like, don't watch this pay-per-view, which you're not wrong. But if you're going to miss a match like this, like, go seek out this match. Yeah. You know, it's worth watching.
And hey, after that match, you can stick around for the finals with Jeff fucking Katz.
This is the Miss NWO competition. This is the end. This is the finale. We're here.
The thing is, they don't even really do anything here.
Oh, all right, God, Emily. Let me run through this.
Let's run through everybody.
Okay, so finally, we get all of the women's names. So, lady number one, the woman who gave us the gem of Malaysia, whatever. Her name is Natalie, and she is a manufacturing specialist, and in her free time, she enjoys tapping kegs and shooting pool. Like a cool girl. Cool kid Natalie.
I feel like half these women are the r/ not like other girls.
Pretty much. Lady number two, she is the one that will do anything it takes to be with Kevin Nash.
She also goes up and joins Jeff Katz. It's like, nope. Don't do that.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah, she goes up and like they don't know what to do. It's like, all right, back in line.
Oh, that's weird. Lady number two is the one that was, you know, anything it takes to get with, to tame Kevin Nash. Her name is Lori, and she is self-employed. And she gets a fun little quote. So some of them get hobbies, some of them get quote. They get a whole little graphic. Her quote is, "Men with bowling shirts turn me on." Imagine being turned on by a bowling shirt. Lady number three is the one that said that she'll do whatever it takes to be in a Hogan movie. There's a lot of whatever it takes.
I thought you were going to say, she's the one who said whatever it takes. I'm like, that doesn't narrow it down, Emily.
No, she's the one that will do whatever it takes to be in a Hulk Hogan movie. And her name is Rachel. She's an account banking specialist. In her free time, she trains Rottweilers. So to me, that's like, do not fuck with Rachel.
Apparently.
Like, she'll sick a dog on you. Lady number four, she is the one that had the first clever answer.
The buoyant one, apparently.
She is, yes, the buoyant one. She's the one that said that you'd walk away with a big bill in reference to everyone has a price. Her name is Dee. She is a nurse, and she enjoys treating hangovers. So she's, again, a cool girl. She drinks.
Who enjoys?
What a cool girl. I think that she's trying to say that she helps. She likes helping other people get over their hangover. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think she's just trying to allude that she drinks and she likes to drink. Yeah. I think that was all.
And knows how to help you in the morning.
Lady number five, her name is Connie. She is the one that's really into her feet. She is a school bus driver, and she also had a quote instead of a hobby. Her quote was, "Shut up, you brats." Why would you put that in writing?
We have a heel.
Oh, Ella. Ella is our number six. She is the semi-retired woman.
Hey!
You couldn't hear a word that was going on. And in her free time, she likes to detail pickup trucks. This is such an Iowa lineup. Like,
by the way, I just want to say, I enjoy detailing. You enjoy vacuuming.
Yeah, that is hard to tell because, like, I know, like, I fall into holes on TikTok of people detailing cars, like, really getting in and cleaning stuff and fixing, like, finding the little crevices and steam cleaning. Like, that is a fascinating hobby, and I love it. I would never do it, but I like watching people do it. So I can see it, but I think she just likes to clean her people's cars for them. Anyway, number seven, her name is Becky. She is the one that was asked about dressing up with Vince and what she would wear. She also could not hear because she was stuck in front of the band.
Yeah.
She was like, yeah, fuck it, I'll wear some lingerie, whatever. So Becky is a homemaker, and she enjoys cooking bratwurst and french fries. My kind of lady.
It's a weird combo.
No, it's not. No. Sausage and fries?
I don't know.
It's like a hot dog. Hot dog and french fries. No, I'm down. I'm with Becky. I like her. Number eight. This is where we get the grain inspector.
Her name is Mary.
Well, we don't actually know that. So, lady number eight, she comes on screen and she gets a graphic that says her name is Mary and she's a grain inspector and whatever. She's the one that had the Scott Norton question. In reality, her name is Trisha, right?
Yes.
Her name is Trisha. We don't know what she actually does, but she's here.
Which I'm realizing, the grain inspector, or the incorrect grain inspector, is the one who got the Scott Norton question. It's all been building to this, Emily.
I didn't even think about that. She also got forgotten because she spoke to Scott Norton. Oh, poor Trisha Mary.
Yeah, so we know nothing about Trisha.
No, we don't. It's unfortunate. We do actually get the real grain inspector, Mary, next.
Yes.
Mary is lady number nine. She had the question of what's your favorite maneuver and how would you apply it? So she is a grain inspector. Now, we need to really lean into this because this is the main reason why I remember this show.
Because what the fuck is a grain inspector?
That's the question that I would like to pose to you. Is it just like you work on a field and grain is getting milled and you have to like watch it on a conveyor belt and make sure that, yep, that's a grain? What?
It could also be like wood. Like.
Oh, that kind of grain. I was really only thinking wheat. Oh, I wasn't even thinking about like wood grain. Huh.
According to ZipRecruiter, what are the duties of a grain inspector?
Oh, tell me.
The duties of a grain inspector include inspecting containers, trucks, and rail cars to ensure they meet requirements for carrying grain.
So it is corn. Or
ensuring
so
they
it
do not
meat.
Have leaks, infestations, or other issues.
Okay, this is real. This is very Iowa. But it's cool. Okay, this not cool. It's a job. It's a real government job.
The qualifications required to become a grain inspector include a high school diploma or GED certificate.
So it doesn't take much to be a grain inspector, but to be a good grain inspector, I bet you got to be real good.
Yeah.
Anyway, she wants you guys to know that she is turned on by leather and flannel. In fact, it gets her motor running. Eric Bischoff, take notes. Finally, our last lady is Dear Lady Jody. Jody had the question about Masahiro Chono and some chopsticks. It's fine. So she works in shipping and receiving, and she enjoys bowling and playing the lottery. Just, you know, good old-fashioned American racist. It's fine.
Her and number two need to go to a bowling alley. They're going to have
a blast. Oh, they'd have a great time. They would. They'd be like wing women for each other. I would love that.
Would you rather watch a season of a sitcom about that or the show again?
I would watch the sitcom, 100%.
You know, it is starring these two women. It's not anyone.
No, I'd watch it. Okay. I would still watch it. It's like a reality show sitcom. I like it. So,
or no, it's like Big Brother where we just watch the live feeds.
That's the best part of Big Brother. You're saying that like that's a bad thing. The live feeds are the best part. Anyway, so Eric Bischoff gets to make the final decision on who wins the competition.
Yes, the choice does not belong to any of you. The choice belongs to the king.
So he calls Eric up to please pick a winner. And Eric says, first of all, we're going to pick a winner because that's what we do here in NWO. We pick winners here. Like, why sure are you saying can. This? Why are you saying this? Ugh. First of all, we're going to pick a winner. That's what I asked you to do. What?
Yeah, these women were chosen because they live in Cedar Rapids, so they didn't need a plane or a hotel. And they all have their own hog.
He's really hammering home the fact that he didn't have to spend a dime on these women.
So it turns out it's a tie.
Yeah, he brought it down to a tie between Becky the homemaker with bratwurst and french fries and Lori the self-employed woman with a bowling shirt fetish.
So he's like, all right, I'm going to ask each of these women a question. You don't get to know the question or the answer.
But it's good to be the king.
So he asks Lori something. She gives a long answer and he's like, oh, like risque. He then goes over to
Becky.
He then goes over to Becky, asks something. She just gives a quick answer. And it's like, all right, the winner is middle-aged
Becky the
woman.
Homemaker.
Yeah, very middle-aged woman here.
I don't know that she's middle-aged. I think that she's younger with just an unfortunate haircut and bad glasses. But Becky the Homemaker wins, and her prize, if you can call it that, is she has to make out with Eric Bischoff.
Yes,
not once, twice.
Oh yeah, Eric Bischoff also does not know her name.
No, but he pulls her into a really kind of gross kiss. Pulls away and's like, oh, it's good to be the king. Kiss me again. And then she gets given a crown, flowers, and a sash. The crown I do kind of want because it's like a tiara. It's like a metal, scrap metal tiara with the letters NWO cut into it.
Well, Emily, for you to win this, you have to go own your own hog.
My sister used to own a motorcycle. Does that count?
She can win Miss NWO.
Damn it. So they give her all this stuff and she has to go fucking parade around the ring with her stuff. And as she's walking, she's like asking camera people like, what am I doing? Where do I go?
Yeah.
What's happening? So she just like does a lap around the ring, comes back, and then they have her sit on her throne, I guess.
Yeah.
Which is a fucking toilet. I don't quite get the joke.
Like, I don't fully get the joke. I just know it's mean.
And I did do some research. I went through some old forums of people talking about this show, about this segment. Nobody else really knows the joke either because it doesn't, like, it's not explicitly mean-spirited.
For the toilet or for the whole thing?
For the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's hard to tell. Like, no one really knows what to make of this because, like, it's odd and we can probably speculate that it definitely is mean-spirited, but it doesn't fully come off that way. So it's a really confusing tone.
Yeah.
Like, Eric Bischoff does not seem to be, like, poking fun at Becky. He's, like, he keeps saying it's good to be king.
He has the line later, she's beautiful inside, clearly implying she's ugly.
But he made out with her twice. He didn't have to. And he kept saying it's good to be king. It's a weird tone.
Yeah.
I don't get it. The internet also didn't really get it. I went through multiple forums of, like, everyone just being like, this
no
is kind of weird.
No one understands what he was going for here.
No. So clearly it didn't land. It didn't work. If no one knows. And then all the women are coming over and congratulating Becky while she's sitting. They're all hugging her and like giving her pats on the back. And like, it's a very like lovely female camaraderie moment. So it doesn't make sense for it to be mean-spirited. I don't see it. Or the intention did not deliver, I guess, is what I should say. But that's the Miss NWO competition.
Can't believe they didn't do this next year.
Yeah. How do you feel about this?
This was awful.
It was dumb. It was a waste of time. It was bad.
The only saving grace for this is that I'm like, you are taking up valuable pay-per-view time, but I do not trust you to have used that time wisely if you got it back.
I mean, that's valid.
This show has proved that you were going to waste this time regardless.
Yeah.
I don't think you were going to have Dean Malenko and Rey Mysterio do a match on this show.
No, you're probably right. I don't know. I thought this was really weird.
I thought it was dumb and bad.
But it's
memorable.
It is memorable, that's for damn sure. Oh, God. Let's move on.
Things that aren't memorable are main events.
Seriously.
It is Hollywood Hulk Hogan versus The Giant for the WCW title. The Giant gets no theme.
Our energy just died. I watched you just slump. Let's talk about Miss NWO again, because that brought our energy up.
Giant gets no theme and is called the biggest failure the NWO ever had. Hogan then gets his own little Disney promo on the Giant on one of the screens.
Yeah, his own little Disney promo? That makes it sound like he's a little Disney princess. What you're going for is the theme park thing, I know.
Yeah.
But the way he says, little Disney promo.
Random pyro for Hogan and the actual NWO theme. He has a few Dallas Cowboys come out with him, as well as Vincent for some reason.
Well, Vincent can't be left behind. Vincent can't be left out of something.
And Vincent,
R.I.P., I guess.
And Vincent has a wooden chair.
Does he have a wooden chair?
Yeah.
I missed
it. It comes into play later.
I didn't think he had it. That's so weird.
It did make me sad when I realized we're doing a Hogan Giant pay-per-view main event, and I know there's no Yeti at the end of this.
I know.
I should have done a custom file where it just cuts to
and
him.
And the Yeti!
Big strikes. Hogan bails. Hogan mounts the Giant and hits some punches. Double clothesline. Both men are down, but Giant gets up faster and they go to the corner. Vincent tries to interfere, but Giant overpowers both men. And Hogan can't knock the Giant down. And the Giant hits a slam and an elbow drop. We then get some pocket sand.
Bleh, pocket sand.
And then a finger poke to the eyes.
It's like really ensure that he's blind. You gotta really make sure. Not only is there sand in his eyes, but also he doesn't have eyes.
We're doing an eye for an eye match.
Jesus Christ. There was also a moment before this where Hogan throws his bandana off of his head and just kind of like has a little bit of a temper tantrum because the Giant is like getting over on him. It just felt very childish. I was like, why are you throwing a tantrum? Stop it. Do the match. Get over with.
Hogan chokes the Giant with tape and then spits on the Giant. Like, ugh. Backbreaker to Hogan and a submission hold that the Giant just gives up on. He's like, nah, whatever. We'll just sit here for a second. Ugh. Giant goes up top and misses because Hogan ain't taking that bump, brother.
Hell yeah.
Rest hold from Hogan. Big boot, no sell, eye rake, Andre slam, leg drop, no pin.
You're so good at calling matches, babe.
Yeah, no pin because the Giant just gets up. It's like, oh, all right, no sell.
Nope.
Hogan hot dogs for a fucking while. It's like, just.
So this is what, like, this, I know this happens often, but for some reason, this was more egregious to me than any other instance of this. Hogan is hot dogging after he thought that he laid out the Giant.
And really should have pinned him.
Should have pinned him, yes, but he left him in the ring laying down. Hogan is circling the ring.
With no peripheral vision.
There's no one on the ground, brother. Yeah. Like, look around.
Well, that's how it ends, is he goes back to the spot like, what? Where did he go?
Like, look the fuck around, man.
Giant hit the choke slam, and Nick Patrick keeps saying a pass out, Hulk Hogan kicked out. The Giant chokeslams Nick Patrick. Buff Bagwell runs out, gets chokeslammed. Eric Bischoff is like, I gotta go help Hogan.
And he has a guitar for some reason.
The Giant chokeslams Vincent, IRS, and the Boss Man. Hogan hits the Giant with a guitar mid-six chokeslam. And Giant's like, I'm hitting this move. He's taking this bump. Hall and Nash run down, and somebody pulls a passed out Giant's ass out for a second. Like, it gets blurred on the network.
Scott Hall, though, comes out. And, like, he does it in character, but he does put his ass away.
Yeah, I think it's like Hogan pulls it out and then.
Yeah, Scott Hall, but Scott Hall bends down and covers his
ass.
I
thought it was
up.
Hall put it back. I wasn't sure.
Yeah, he does it in character. Like, he's making a little stinky face on it. But in my head, he's just like, we don't need this.
Yeah. We get a weird wooden chair shot to the giant as we get massive We Want Sting chance.
Yes. The chair shot made no sense, really, because he was already down.
Yeah. They then spray paint the giant and taunt the camera to even more We Want Sting chance.
It was intense. Guys, he's not here.
The NWO celebrate as some trash is thrown in the ring, and they keep doing the two-camera promo because, like, they're just not done yet. And then we get credits.
No, we don't get credits. We get one credit.
I thought we got multiple.
Nope, we get one credit. He is the only credit. Executive Vice President Eric Bischoff, a.k.a. King. He is the only credit.
A.k.a. who is responsible for this?
That actually, like, did get me to pop, though, because I thought that was fucking hilarious. He gets, there's one credit. Talk about self-indulgent.
I didn't realize until I looked back. This is actually the first time we got this finish all night of the, like, refusing to actually let somebody win in terms of, like, no, he kicked out, or I'm not going to count. I feel like we had that five times. We actually didn't. It was just this one.
Interesting.
Yeah. It was slow counts at various points.
Yeah.
But no, here, just, like, he's clearly knocked out. Like, they didn't do that before now, but, God, I fucking hate Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
He's not even, like, all that notable in this show, but
no.
I'm like, fuck me, I hate this man.
Fucking Terry Bollea.
We just keep seeing him.
Yeah, I'm over him.
But Emily, that's Sold Out 1997. The only NWO pay-per-view, because they went, ooh, this was
bad.
Awful.
This did not go as well as we thought it would.
Any thoughts you want to express on the show?
It's just self-indulgent, man. It's just Eric Bischoff being like, I'm so cool that I can have my pay-per-view all to myself. Like, it's just that. The man is too big for his britches.
Yeah, like, your company is thriving right now.
And you just ruined it.
Yeah, you are trying, it looks like you're trying to sabotage that.
Yeah, it does feel like that. Like,
I was saying before, this was meant to be a launching pad for an NWO show. I almost don't believe that.
Yeah.
Because who would watch it?
They didn't set up enough in this pay-per-view to, like, make it its own show.
Well, they wanted to, like, gauge the market and be like, is there a want for an NWO show? And I'm like, it feels like every decision you made about this show is designed to turn people off.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, why would I want an entire television program of bullshit finishes and...
We're so great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the issue, because, like, what would the show even have necessarily, like, what would they have been going for?
Yeah.
Who would they have fought? What would have been the point of watching? Like, who were the villains? Who were the heroes? Like, what's the point?
All right. In terms of the pay-per-views we watched recently, and I guess all time, where does this stack for you in terms of worst pay-per-views?
It's really hard to place it. There is some good in this pay-per-view, so I don't think it's the worst. I really don't.
It's buried deep.
It's deep. It's towards the bottom of the list, but I really don't think it's the worst. This is memorable. Like,
it has a theme.
I'm not going to forget this show. I still really stand by the worst show is the most forgettable show. This is at least memorable. It's not the worst in-ring quality we've ever seen either. I know that's a bigger thing for you than it is for me. But the matches weren't heroes of wrestling. Like, let's be real. They weren't heroes of wrestling.
Yeah.
They weren't standout, but they weren't awful. They're probably better than WrestleMania 9.
I find it funny that, like, in terms of heroes of wrestling, obviously that's a show gone awry.
Mm-hmm.
This is exactly what they wanted. Like, this is, like, there are no issues of, like, oh, what happened here? Like, no, this is exactly what you were going for.
Right, exactly.
Like, there's minus points for that. But.
Yeah, because this was their plan, it does make it worse.
I think this is worse than WrestleMania 9.
You think so?
I think the one good match doesn't save it.
I don't know. There were some good moments, too. The motorcycle was good. That one match was good. The tag match wasn't awful. Like, there were some moments in this that were worth perking up for.
Yeah, and there's the bird.
WrestleMania 9. I'm more comparing apples to apples of in-ring work. Like, theming-wise, I will always be Team WrestleMania 9, because I love that. This didn't have the same appeal to me theming wise as WrestleMania 9 did. As for in-ring wrestling quality, I think that this edges it out just a little bit. I think it's narrow. I think it's a very close margin.
I mean, I don't super want to defend WrestleMania 9 either here. The one thing with WrestleMania 9 that I will defend compared to this, it doesn't feel like the show is mocking you
right
as an audience member.
That's, yeah, right.
And I think that's the worst thing about this show is that...
It feels like they tricked you and got your money and now they're laughing at you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we agree on that.
It just either happens to be a good match that almost feels by accident.
Yeah.
But Heroes of Wrestling is still worse.
Yeah. I think this is... I can't decide if this is better than WrestleMania 9 or not. I want to say... I don't know. They are so close.
Where does
a freaking tie.
Where does the ECW show fall in there?
I think from the bottom it goes Heroes of Wrestling at the bottom, ECW above it, and then these two are like battling it out.
This is a bad row of show. When the best show that we've watched recently has been WrestleMania 29, it's like, oh no.
I really don't know.
You know, I am putting you on the spot here.
Yeah.
So let's both think on it. When this episode comes out, we'll put out our official rankings.
Are we going to add WrestleMania 29 to this? Should we just do the whole WrestleMania 29 of shows?
is going to be the best one.
Yeah. Unfortunately.
Just saying something.
Again, it's forgettable, though. Yeah. The worst show is a forgettable show.
But we have a few closing things to do here, including best bit, worst bit, and MVP. Emily, what is your best bit?
So I know you're going to give it to the match.
Yeah.
And the Eddie Six match is obviously the best match on this card. I'm going to let you have that. I'm going to take the bit. I'm giving it to the motorcycle.
Okay.
Yeah. That motorcycle bit with Bossman and Hugh Morris, I think that was so excellently executed that it's the best bit of the show.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to go with the Six Eddie match.
Yeah. You're not wrong.
It's that one port in a storm. Yeah. Emily, what is the worst bit on this show?
It's the Eric Bischoff makeout.
Okay.
Bar none, that is the worst bit on this show. It is the makeout. I was going to give it to Eric overall, just as a person being the worst bit. That makeout session was the worst part.
I'm giving it to the entirety of Miss NWO contest.
That kind of, that counters my MVP.
Is your MVP the Great Inspector?
It's fucking Becky. No, not the Great Inspector. I'm giving it to Becky the Homemaker. I love Becky. I think she did a great job.
I thought you were going to give it to Scott Hall.
Well, I can't give it, because I couldn't decide between Scott Hall and Scott Steiner, and I can't give it to both of them. But who did you choose for your MVP?
I think I'm going to go with Six. I think he just has a few more of the interesting moves and harder bumps in that
match. Dropkick?
If you gave it to Eddie, I wouldn't blame you.
Yeah.
Honorable mention for having to fucking work all night, Nick Patrick actually doing stuff, like... You know, of all the... He was not the problem for
a
lot of
the
show.
No, he wasn't. The honorable worst bit is his outfit, though.
Yeah. If he was wearing a referee outfit, you think he would have been better, but...
I think so.
Yeah, he was the ref for every single match.
And he had a role to play, and he played it really well. Yeah, you're right. But I think Six is a good choice.
Yeah.
See, this is the other thing that's making me struggle with ranking the shows, is we had to decide between the best bits and the MVPs. The worst bits are, you know, aplenty. Yeah. But I don't know, that stands out to me.
So, next up is, well, it's relative, because next up is hopefully a great show. Because technically, next up on the main feed is WrestleMania 40.
Really?
And then the day after, we will have the go-home Nitro for Slamboree 2000. We are officially back doing our usual thing after WrestleMania 40.
We're going to have to go back and listen to our past Nitro episode. Just, like, remember where we are.
Well, it was a past Thunder, remember?
Oh, God, it was a Thunder.
Yeah. Additionally, we will be back to normal over on the Patreon as well.
We're going back to TNA, baby!
The Monday after actual WrestleMania 40, or the March 8th TNA Impact, a.k.a. the, I guess, second start of the second Monday Night Wars, because...
I'm pumped.
They did
I'm
it the
excited.
One time, and then they went, let's take 2 months off and then go back to it.
I'm really excited to go back to TNA. I'm really ready to, like, dive into that and really take that and run with it on the Patreon. I think it's going to be a really fun run. I think it's going to be different, but the same, kind of.
Yeah.
I think it's great. It's going to be a great sister programming.
And it's going to be broken up with us doing Hogan Knows Best.
Hell yeah, brother!
So, that's over on the Patreon. $5 a month gets you...
At least one episode a month.
Yes, we do one every 3 weeks is the plan. Some months it'll be two. Yeah, we are churning things out over there. It's going to be...
Hell yeah.
It's going to be a busy week, because it's the actual show of WrestleMania, which we'll be at.
Yeah.
We're going to be releasing TNA Impact on that Monday. That Wednesday, our WrestleMania 40 review. And then that Thursday, we're going back to Nitro.
Jesus, so we packed that.
That's
that
a
week.
Wrestling week.
Hell yeah. I'm so excited for WrestleMania. If there's another goddamn pandemic that ruins this for me, I'm quitting wrestling. I'm never talking about wrestling ever again.
Okay, so let's not root for that. But you can listen to all our back catalog on most everywhere the podcasts are found besides SoundCloud.
Correct.
I think the Google Podcast stuff is now going to be on like YouTube Music. When that happens, I'll have to see if we're actually on there.
Interesting.
Or like Google Music or something. It's some weird thing. But I'll just see if we end up on, over there. But you can follow us on all the social medias at Butts in the Pod and on Facebook, Butts in the Seats Podcast. Patreon.com/ButtsInTheSeats. $5 a month gets you. I think we have like 11 episodes over there right
Give
now.
Give or take, yeah.
Just bonus episodes, some fun stuff. If that TNA arc interests you, we do have one episode of that already up.
I'm also going to, and I'm putting this in the episodes that I can commit to it. I have made the declaration that I'm going to watch every WrestleMania this year. So with that, I'm going to do a little write-up of my thoughts and my opinions after each one of those WrestleManias, and those will be on the Patreon as well.
So feel free to argue with Emily about her opinions.
Go for it. So by the time WrestleMania 40 comes around, that at least will be up on the Patreon.
Where it all begins again.
Again.
But I think that'll do it for this episode of the Butts and Seats Podcast. Emily, any closing thoughts?
No, I'm happy that we don't have to do any shots anymore to start the shows.
Yeah, until episode 110.
Which is like right around the corner.
It's actually 8 episodes away, but...
Well, we just rattled off 4 that we're doing, so...
Yeah, but the WrestleMania one doesn't count. The only one that...
Oh, right, right.
Only numbered one there that counts is the Nitro. So I think you have like 4 months.
Thank God.
But until we get to all that plethora of wrestling content, I'm Nick.
I'm Emily.
And thanks for listening to the Butts and Seats Podcast.